Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, an iHeartRadioer, and I love film. As George Santayana once said, the family is one of nature's masterpieces. The other is Jurassic Park 2, The Lost World. It's wildly underrated, particularly the scene with the splintering windshield. Yes, George, you're right. Every week I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Jameela Jamil, Mark Frost, Sharon Stone, and even Brett Clambles. But this week, it's the excellent actor Himesh Patel. You can watch all of Shrinking on Apple TV Plus, and you can watch nearly all of Ted Lasso Season 3. So far, you can get episodes 1 to 8, all on Apple TV Plus. Watch them, love it. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 20 minutes of chat with Himesh. He tells me a secret. We talk about the best beginnings and endings of films. You get the whole episode uncut, ad-free, and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Himesh Patel. Himesh Patel is a lovely and brilliant actor. You know him from Yesterday, you know him from Tenet, and you know him from his Emmy-nominated performance in Station 11. We recorded this on Zoom just a few days ago, and one of the things we talk about a lot, actually, is his 9 years on the show EastEnders. Now, if you don't live in England, you might not know what that is. It's one of the biggest shows in England, probably the biggest show in England. It's a soap that has been on forever, is on forever, on at night. It's very well done. It's excellent. He was in it for 9 years. We talk about that. So when I'm talking about EastEnders, that's what we're talking about, all right? He's a lovely bloke, and I really think you're going to love this episode. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 245 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by an actor, a superstar, a film star, an EastEnder, a Station 11er, an Avenue 5er, a Tenet no numberer, a legend, a hero, a husband, a father, and a lover, at least three times a week, according to the news. Please welcome, he's here, can we believe it, an Emmy nominee, an award winner, a beautiful man, here he is, I can't believe it, he's right in front of me, it's Mr. Himesh Patel!
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Hi.
What's the, according to the news, three times a week, I'm a lover? Is that a
I think it was just a headline in the news that comes out every week that three times a week, at least three times a week, you make love. I don't know what papers you read, but...
I personally make love.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. It was like in the, you know, often in this sort of, in other news, like it's a positive thing. It's not a...
Yeah, no, it's a negative. It's still a very interesting insight into my my personal life.
PR people?
Yeah, but look, I mean, it's... I'll just no comment that one.
Himesh, thank you for doing this. You're in England right now, in your attic. Is that true?
I'm in my attic, yeah. Yeah, it's where I have my little office. It's not like I've been consigned to the attic to do this.
You haven't been banished?
Yeah. No.
Himesh, can I ask you a few questions about your life and career?
Yeah.
You are a movie star and a legend. You started in EastEnders. I didn't realise how long you were in EastEnders. You were in EastEnders for how long? Nine years?
Yeah, 9 years, yeah, basically. Yeah.
Can you, in one sentence, summarise what that's like?
One sentence, did you say, a word? Sentence.
No, you can have more. You can have more sentences. I'd actually like to hear quite a bit about it.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I'd have nothing without it. You know, I was 16, sort of plucked from obscurity in a little village. And yeah, right time, right place, and definitely the right role, because I'll be honest, I was basically playing myself when I first started.
Right.
You know, to some degree. And some may argue I'm doing it to this day. But I couldn't have imagined anything more at the beginning, you know. So it's quite overwhelming, really, looking back on that. And that was half my life ago. And yeah, it is. It's an odd thing for me to think that I was there for nearly a decade.
Yeah.
Because it feels like a lot has happened since, obviously. But I did so much growing up there as a person, as an actor. I learned so much. I was so lucky to work with a lot of very, very good actors who were there to work, you know, and make it all as good as it could be, you know, because there's a huge workload, so many episodes every week.
Yeah.
And there's a danger that you're all
an office job. You go every day, right? Every day, 9 to 5.
Basically, yeah, yeah. And there's a danger that you can start sort of spreading yourself thin, but I was just lucky that I was surrounded by people who, they loved what they do. They love being actors and they wanted to turn up to work every day and make it great. And so I learned a lot about being an actor and my craft and actually the fact that it's hard work. You know, it's not about fame. It's about doing good work. And it instills a hard work ethic. The areas I work in now of, like, you know, TV, different types of TV and film, the time you have is just such a luxury. You know, it'll always feel like a luxury to me though, that you're like, okay, well, we've got to light the scene now, so I'll see you in an hour. I'm like, wow. That's incredible that we get
we'd have done an episode.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So
the side of it, it's interesting you say it's not about fame, and I agree and I believe with you, but I also am aware of these sort of side effects of being in EastEnders in particular. I think it's a certain type of fame, right? You're very, very, very famous in England if you're in EastEnders, and you're famous in a way. I remember I made a short film with someone who was in EastEnders. We're trying to get a shot with him outside in the morning, and we couldn't. We just couldn't, because people just kept walking past going, EastEnders! And yeah, we couldn't shoot. And I remember thinking, God, this is a certain type of fame that's actually must be quite difficult, because not only are you very, very familiar to people, you're in the home all the time. You're like, it seemed in a way that maybe is different to if someone sees Brad Pitt, they might be like, oh my God, Brad Pitt. If someone sees someone from EastEnders, they feel like their family or their friend, or there's something very, very familiar where they go like, bloody hell, hey, you are, how you doing, mate? Like, how was that for 9 years?
I think the familiarity is one thing, but they're not familiar with you, the person. They're exclusively familiar with the character. So, you know, no one knew my name. They didn't know who Himesh was. They knew Tamwar. And so they were just, that's what they'd say. As time wore on, I got quite lucky in that I looked very different to my character. As a concerted effort, I was like, you know, I'm not going to wear glasses in real life, and I'm going to, you know, dress differently. And in a way, it was calculated. In a way, it was just me growing into my own person. But it just meant that I didn't, as much as other friends of mine who were on the show, who, you know, even friends of mine who left the show years ago, who still, they still feel a bit sort of insecure in the times, because it is really exposed. And people, it's a type of fame, a type of sort of way that people approach you that is just different to what I've experienced since doing something like Yesterday or whatever, where what I have with that, with being in films and that sort of thing now, is I don't notice it because people aren't so ready to sort of come up to you and be quite informal.
which people always will be with soap actors because of that familiarity thing, and that they think,
yeah,
a lot of them genuinely think you're your character. They understand you're an actor, but they also don't, they're not drawing enough of a line between the two things. And that's a very odd thing to experience. And I still, I'd say over here, I largely get recognised for EastEnders still, more than anything, in terms of people approaching me.
Yeah. And when you do EastEnders, is it all year? Is your contract a year or does it have gaps? I actually don't know.
Yeah, it's all year. I think if I unless it's changed now, I had like about 2 weeks of holiday I could take.
Wow.
And I had to book that in well in advance because obviously they're storylining like, you know, half a year or more in advance. So they've already got like a rough schedule out and they're like, and you could go to them and go, can I book a holiday in, you know, 4 months? And they're like, no, sorry, mate. Yeah, you're going to be in solid. There's a big storyline coming in. So, you know, it's a funny existence. But
you're about to cheat on someone. Oh, fuck.
Damn it. It was all I knew, of course. So then it's been funny sort of evolving away from that and going, oh, I can just go on a holiday when I want to go on a holiday.
So when you... I don't know your story. So did you choose to leave? Were you asked like 9 years? How did it end?
I chose to leave. It was my choice. I was coming up to, as I said, to about 9 years. And I think, you know, there's a thing that happens on soaps where a lot of it becomes like sort of heightened, uber heightened sort of melodrama of like buildings exploding and people killing each other and whatever. And the thing about my character on that show that I loved was that it just felt like he was sort of on the outside of the genre, as it were. It felt like he was on the outside of everything, sort of going, this is all a bit weird, isn't it? And so I thought, eventually, you know, his time will come. And I don't know if I want it to be that. But at the time, the character was in a relationship and the actress, my friend Maddie, had made the choice to leave. And I was like, well, I'm going to leave too, because I want them to leave together and be happy. And so we left and we're happy. Since then, Maddie went back to the show on her own and it turned out we'd gotten divorced off screen. So that's a shame. But
what's it like? What's your goodbye like on EastEnders when you've been there 9 years? Every single day except for 18 weeks.
It was the emotion sort of caught me by surprise, really. They threw this lovely big old party at the BBC Elstree Bar for me and Maddie, and they played like a, you know, as they do for everyone when they leave, like a montage of all your best bits.
Yeah.
And, you know, my family were there and so many people showed up and, you know, from the crew and the cast. And I sort of went to do a speech to say thank you to everyone. And I just got caught in my throat and I remember going, oh, dear. Yeah, I'm not dead inside, it turns out. So, it was an emotional goodbye. And also, you know, scary. It was all I'd known. And it was a leap of faith that I knew I had to take because I wanted to explore other things. And thankfully, it worked out.
How long was the gap before you were then a massive movie star? It wasn't long, was it?
It was less than 2 years that I was shooting yesterday. Yeah. And then it was, you know...
amazing.
About 3 years between leaving EastEnders and yesterday coming out. But... yeah, it felt very quick, you know, less than 2 years between auditioning and getting the movie and going on that journey. Yeah, very lucky.
How was your mental health, if I may ask? You finish EastEnders, let's say 2 weeks later, when you're so used to this constant work and this constant thing, and now you have a day free. What do you do?
Some of it was sort of, it felt quite freeing, you know, after so long of just being able to go, I can just do what I like now. And again, I got lucky that things sort of came my way. I think if I'd been less lucky, then maybe I would have had to sort of have those dark nights of the soul and gone, what am I going to do? How am I going to figure it out? So actually, I kind of just got to enjoy it. But there were those moments of, you know, I remember the day I left, drove out the gates for the last time and parked up outside my flat and just thought, blimey, okay, here we go. You know, as an adult, I've never known this. I've never known it, you know, and... there I was at 25, sort of first time, just sort of going, now I don't know what's going to happen. Hopefully I'll be okay. Man. I've just never,
Hopefully I'll be a massive movie star. Yeah, don't worry about it.
if only I had that sort of brazen confidence. You do see some people who sort of go, I'm probably going to make it. and some of them do. And you're just like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, you're also very good.
Thank you.
Himesh, I've forgotten to tell you something. and I feel like an absolute...
Go on.
I feel awful. I should have said it at the top, actually, because we've gone really far back into your past and should have said it. I'll say it.
It's all right. Look,
you've died. You're dead. Dead. You're dead. Dead.
Typical. Mm. It's typical, isn't it?
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
What? How did you die? Yeah, I'm sorry.
How did I die? Yeah. Look, it was actually quite banal. I had this thing where I sort of trip on the pavement or on my own foot at least once a day. At least once a day, I'm walking down the street and I sort of lose my footing. And so I think it's going to be something that boring. I'd like to think that I've lived, you know, to a ripe old age so that my kids are,
What's that age?
Let's go, 87. Maybe there's nothing else wrong with me. I'm still walking fine. Yeah. And then I just sort of I just trip on a as I do every day, except this day.
Yeah,
it was at the top of a flight of concrete steps, and I just sort of go hurtling down them and break a few bones along the way, and then smash my head on the bottom one, and off we go.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, I think it's
loads of people around.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of people who just sort of go, "Who's that? What a loser!"
Right.
What a crap way to die.
I think some of them are slightly traumatized. I'd like to think some of them at least have a sort of shocked. Maybe at the beginning they're like, oh, this seems funny until your face explodes and you're like a watermelon on the...
And then they feel really bad, yeah.
Yeah, and then they go, oh, God, I shouldn't have laughed. And then someone goes, does anyone know who that was? And they're like, I mean, there's no recognizable features. It's like a watermelon. I don't know what...
Really good as well. I'd like that to be the case, that, despite a lifetime, hopefully a lifetime at that point of being in movies and TV, and that I die in such
the
a way
time
that
you
no
weren't
one
recognized.
Yeah.
Was it the point of your death? At the top, as you fell, someone went, is that
Is that?
And then it got to the bottom and they went, there's no way of knowing. There's no way of knowing.
That's ideal. That is my ideal death.
Yeah. Do you worry about death, Himesh?
Yeah, I do. I mean, more so my own death I worry about since I've had kids. I worry that, because I think death can, at the worst times, it can be so sudden. Now my death has a real a material effect on someone's life existentially. Mm. So, yeah, I do worry about that. And I've always had a sort of odd, maybe an obsession actually with death. Because some of my earliest memories, I was being at my granddad's funeral in India. I was three when I went out there, and my mum took me out there because he knew he was gonna pass away, and he wanted to meet me. And met me. I met him, and then it was a very quick decline, and so I was out there for that, and it was a very traditional Hindu ceremony, and they had him sort of laid out in the house and stuff like that. So my earliest memories, it was. Very much about death. So I think I've often realised I've had this sort of understanding of mortality for almost all my life, in a way that maybe other people, it develops over time.
Yeah. Do you happen to remember, and you were only three, so I don't know if you would, do you remember seeing his body and all of that? Do you remember that being sort of scary or comforting?
Apparently I was curious.
Was there any version of it that was like a nice thing?
I think my mum tells me I was curious. He donated his eyes, but they'd he was laid out, so they put cotton in his eye sockets.
such a grim
thing to say. The meaning behind it is actually quite lovely. He donated his eyes, but so I remember obviously that was actually probably quite a traumatic thing for a 3-year-old to be looking at.
Yeah,
but my mum dresses it up.
So the eyes. Sorry to ask, were the eyes open? With like white cotton.
I think so. I think that's probably the only reason I would have asked. Otherwise, I would have just been like, he's got his eyes shut.
Yeah. But,
so, yes, safe to say death, it forms the baseline of perhaps all my trauma.
Then you are on the perfect
This is it, isn't it? That's why I'm here. Yeah.
This is it. What do you think happens when you die?
As I think about it a lot, but I'm also not. I think spirituality has played a part in my life, but ultimately I'm not someone who necessarily believes in a genuine sort of physical afterlife where we're all actually, present in some way. But I think maybe we don't necessarily understand, you know, the sort of parameters of sort of consciousness and what you know, the way that people talk about sort of perceiving time and how that can change, and depending on sort of how things are ticking along in your brain. My theory is that when one has that sort of final moment before you die, that maybe you actually perceive it as something really long, and so you create some sort of heaven in your head just before the lights go out, and it can last as long as you want it to last. You know, so to all of us outside of it, we're watching it going, they took their last breath and they're gone. But maybe in our experience of death, that we, before we take that last breath, we actually get to, you know, have a sort of, you know, long, long, long time in this world we create in our head with all the people we love, or however so you choose to sort of create something. That's what I like. That's what I use to comfort myself when I think about death. Like a weird sort of bubble.
I've never heard that before. I really like that.
Thank you.
That is a brand new theory. I really like it. But so then my question is, if that's the case, and I do like that,
yeah,
that it's this sort of dreamscape that you make last as long as you want, when that reaches its end, then what?
But you'd be feeling more euphoric than you've ever felt before. So you'd feel accepting of it. You know what I mean?
But then it's like nothing. Then it, a void.
Then it's dead. A void. Then it's, yeah, we're all done for at that point. Yeah. So it's kind of, on one hand, really lovely. On the other hand, completely bleak.
Given your very deep words about the perception of time and space and eternity, yeah. Do you understand Tenet?
I walked into that one, didn't I? Yeah. I do, actually.
Okay.
To some degree.
Good.
It actually I did actually watch it twice and in the cinema. And but I think Chris's movies are designed to be that way, aren't, especially that one.
Yeah,
but
you have to watch it twice. I had to draw a map when I got home. So this was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he himself has this map in a notebook somewhere, you know. But
yeah,
it also seems to me that he just creates these concepts in it, and that's his genius. He just has it all mapped out in his head.
He's like, it's obvious, isn't it? We're like, oh, God. yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I got news for you, buddy boy. Uh-huh. There is a heaven.
Oh,
maybe
great.
Maybe for you, it's one you've created in your dying seconds. Maybe. We'll see.
All right.
And this heaven, it's filled with all your favorite things. It's filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
Beyond my children and my partner, I'd say chocolate. So
it's filled with chocolate. You know what? You know those like Dairy Milk, those squares, that's what you sit on.
Amazing.
But they're like right temperature, that they're just soft enough. They're not liquid, but they're just, you know what I mean?
Perfect.
And the walls are like liquid chocolate that just is like a fountain the whole time, sort of China chocolate factory style.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of flake that serves you, a giant flake, and it serves you trays of chocolate and Dairy Milk buttons and shit. And there's Toblerone mountains over there and shit like that. I mean, it's great. And there's Chunky Kit Kat says like cars. Anyway, they're delighted to see you in heaven.
Great.
But they want to talk, they're big fans, they want to talk about your life, and they want to talk about your life through the medium of film. And the first thing they ask you is, what's the first film you remember seeing, Himesh Patel?
My initial thought was that it was the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie. And my only lasting memory of going to see that movie is not watching it, was being huddled into my mum from very early on. Something scared me. I was just basically refused to watch most of it and then turned around when they were winning at the end. So I can't really, I don't know if, but also that wasn't, it transpires, that wasn't necessarily the first movie I remember watching, or not watching in that case. Actually, the first movie I remember watching is a Bollywood movie called Hum Aap Ke Hai Kaun, which I think translates to Who Am I to You, or some, I would say, which isn't necessarily a great title for a movie. I've got a memory of sort of the curtains parting, maybe during an intermission or something, because Bollywood movies, and I don't know if that's still the case, I've sort of lost track over the last 10 odd years of Bollywood, but, you know, I used to, it was what we watched as a family growing up. They were all really
And where was
really
this? Where were you? Where were you watching
well,
this?
So back then in the 90s, you know, now you could probably go and watch most Bollywood movies at your local multiplex, you know, that it's got a pretty good distribution now. Whereas back then it would be in those sort of metropolitan hubs where there was a big sort of South Asian community. So for us, it was Leicester. We would drive to Leicester and go and watch movies there. And, you know, it was more often than not a really fun experience because you've basically got this packed cinema full of everyone looks like you. They're more or less from the same background. Yeah. And you're all digesting this movie in roughly the same way. No one's got expectations of it being, you know, anything else. But also everyone's probably talking throughout it or whatever. If I went into that situation now, I'd probably be driven up the wall. But back then it was, again, all you knew. So, yeah. But this film was, I've not watched it in years. Growing up watching Bollywood, it was almost more about the songs than it was about the film. The songs, the soundtracks were the things that ended up sort of making the movies the sort of all-time classics that they have sort of since become. But this is also one of those movies, and I think, you know, I only just sort of read up on it, having realised it was probably the first movie I remember seeing. But I'm sure a lot of movies of that era you could look at now and go, it's just a bit off. It's a bit, the sort of the morality of this whole thing and the sort of gender stereotyping is quite problematic. And this is sort of like, it's like this big family and it's all based around a wedding. They're a very rich family, it would seem, but that, you know, and there's a young guy and his brother's getting married, I think, but then his brother's wife dies. She falls down the stairs and I scanned through it recently. Oh. I mean, her falling down the stairs was, yeah, weird that, hey. I'd like to think that when I fall down the stairs and die, it'll be slightly more dramatic and believable than what was presented in this movie. Because I was openly laughing when I sort of revisited it recently. It was beyond absurd. It was like, you know, something from Toast of London or something. It was just like, so there's something funny in watching it with a nostalgic eye going, this stuff is just absurd. I mean, the songs are kind of great from a Bollywood musical point of view, but the story's all over the place. And the sort of the thing of going families and duty and all this stuff, which, you know, on some level is a beautiful sort of bedrock of the culture in which I grew up. There's also an element of going, yeah, but also not necessarily doesn't have to be so simplified. Like, they've got this thing where the female lead sort of talks about working in computers. It's as simple as that. She works in computers, but then you never see her do anything like that in the whole movie. In the whole movie, she's just like cooking and dancing and being a good woman of the house. And you're like, that's just rubbish.
When you say everyone's talking in the cinema, are they talking like catching up, or are they talking at the film? Are they angry with both, the film, actually. Or is it also like, right?
You're probably right that it is. Yeah. In my head, it was just people sort of interacting with the film, and there is a bit of that. But you're right; probably some of them they're just catching up. They're just having a little chat, talking about, you know, gossiping about family stuff or whatever.
That's nice.
So
I like that.
Yeah, that's my earliest memory of being in a cinema.
I feel sorry for your mum at Mighty Morphin Power Rangers that you're not watching it, and she's like, "So I've got to fucking sit through this."
She's got to sit through it.
What do you think we're here?
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
What is the film that scared you the most, other than Mighty Morphin Power Rangers?
Yeah, that was up there. I still think about it. I mean, the sort of predictable answer for this one would be The Shining, but I will give it a shout out. It is a phenomenal movie, I think. I had it sort of tarnished in my head because of the stories of sort of Kubrick and the way that he treated Shelley Duvall, and I thought, well, Jack Nicholson was part of that. But then I think maybe recently Shelley Duvall kind of said that Jack Nicholson was actually really good to work with. So maybe the jury's out on that bit. It's still an amazing movie, and it basically taught me what I love about the kind of horror that I like, which is that sort of drip feed of dread over a period of time. I'm not really that big on jump scares. I prefer something that's just creepy. And so my choice is actually a film called It Follows.
Ah, it's a great film.
Yeah, I watched it about a year ago again, and it has got some jump scares, but married with that, it's just got this phenomenal concept of, like, you know, that it's this sort of curse that gets passed on when you have sex with someone, and then you see this someone basically slowly walking towards you, and when if they get to you, they will sort of kill you in the most gruesome way. But you can outrun them. You can keep running away from them. They're never going to run after you. They're just going to keep, and only you can see them. It was such a genius concept for a horror movie, I thought. Yeah. And, you know, since people have analysed it and, you know, talked about how it's, you know, sort of an allegory for sort of STDs and whatever, that sort of thing. But I'm sure that there might be some truth to sort of that being the germ of the idea. But it just as a horror movie, it's really got just a brilliant concept cinematically. You know, you can just, because there's a lot of these panning shots. There's a shot in the school, I think they're at, where the camera just sort of is on a revolve, I think. And you're sort of, and now you're aware of the concept. You're just watching everyone in the background going, is that? And actually one of them kind of is, I think. But you never, then sometimes you don't, it cuts to another scene and you're like, was it? And so I really loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And it's oddly a horror film that I will happily watch again. Often with horror, you kind of don't want to go back to it because it's too disturbing. But yeah, it's a really good one.
What about crying? Do you cry a lot? And what's the film that made you cry the most? You cry it?
Yeah, I think there are some films that can really hit me. But the one that most recently I watched and knocked me for six was an animated film called Song of the Sea. It's an Irish animated film. I know that the team behind it have made a film called The Book of Kells, I think it's called, but I haven't seen that, actually. I've still only seen Song of the Sea. It's this beautiful story about a family. The mother's died. I think the idea is she died giving birth to their second child. And so this dad is sort of raising these two children, and they end up going on this sort of adventure all together. It's sort of based on sort of, I think, Gaelic sort of myths. And there was just there's a point towards the end where, you know, the little boy has never met his mum, and he gets to see her in this sort of spiritual form. And they have this option of sort of bringing her back or something like that. And I just remember, I haven't watched it since. And I certainly haven't watched it since having kids of my own, because I just think it's going to destroy me. Because even just thinking about it now, it's just like it's basically this idea that they have to accept their loss, that she's gone, you know, and that they'll be okay. They'll be okay without her. And it's just, I mean, I just remember going, I've never sort of openly howled crying at a movie, but that I was close with this, you know, and I was watching it at home. I could have if I wanted to.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, it was quite early on in my relationship, and my partner had suggested watching this movie. And I think if I just sort of completely lost it, maybe I wouldn't be here today with two kids. But it's a beautiful film. The animation's gorgeous. The music's stunning. And it's just so heartfelt. And I recommend it. It's a beautiful movie. But I was moments away from just...
He was a gunner.
Yeah.
Was your partner crying?
Yeah, we, you know, but...
Okay.
Yeah. She's dead inside. She's, yeah, she couldn't care less.
She wasn't looking at you like, what?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
She's just scrolling.
I said we should watch it because I like cartoons. What's the film that people don't like? It is not critically acclaimed, but you love it. You don't care what anyone says.
I'm picking a film that was picked by our mutual friend, James McNicholas. I'm going with Batman Forever.
Oi, oi, beast.
Yeah.
Batman Forever. Great shout. Great shout.
My thing with that movie started, because it came, I think, when I was 5. And I remember I had some cousins who came over from abroad and we all went to the cinema. They got to go and watch Batman Forever because it was like a 12 or something and I wasn't allowed to go with them. Mm. So it kind of took on this sort of... Because I also loved Batman. I loved watching that sort of animated series as a kid, but I'd never seen a film of Batman at that point. So it kind of took on this sort of legendary status in my head of this is the Batman film that I'm going to watch at some point. And then eventually I think we got it on video and I watched it sort of maybe a few years later and was just obsessed with it. As a kid, I was obsessed with it because it was Batman and I loved it and I thought it was genuinely great. And I was largely obsessed with Jim Carrey as the Riddler.
Right.
But we watched it during lockdown as a sort of, you know, stick it on, why not? We haven't got anything else going on.
Yeah.
And it'll be fun to revisit it. And it in my head, obviously there's parts of it that are just awful and make no sense. But I can't help but love it. I'll always love it, you know, because... Yeah. And I actually still really enjoy, like, Jim Carrey is like... I think in a way it feels like he's the only one who knows what movie he's in to some degree or does it well enough. You know,
I think the problem with it, it's got Two-Face in that one, right?
Yeah, that's Tommy Lee Jones as well. Yeah.
And Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy.
She's in the next one. Yeah, that was the next
one. Oh, she's the next one. Oh, this is Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
Is in this one. Yeah, and this Nicole one's got the good soundtrack.
Well, it's got Kiss from a Rose by Seal, which actually James McNicholas told me this recently. He bit of trivia. The Kiss from a Rose, A, was on Seal's album from like 2 years before that, and then was also on the soundtrack for Neverending Story 3. But it didn't pick up any attention from that movie. And then it's this odd sort of thing when you look back on the 90s and these huge blockbusters just had these like random soundtracks of assorted songs that they just sort of...
And they had Hold Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me, Thrill Me.
But yeah, by U2, yeah. But it was so funny to me that like this era where Seal had already released this song on his album, it gained no traction.
Twice.
And then, yeah. And then it came out with Batman Forever and it won him a Grammy. He won like 3 Grammys for that one song because of a Batman movie. Whereas now you just can't, there isn't that same thing. There isn't a soundtrack album of pop songs for a Batman movie, is there?
It's weird, you're right.
But yeah, I sort of loved watching it. I believe Two-Face gets defeated by some coins. I think Batman throws some coins at Two-Face and he falls over. That's how he gets defeated. So
yeah, I remember loving Batman Forever because I was young. But I think the issue with it, and it's worse in Batman and Robin, what Jim Carrey's doing is sort of very loud and fast and high energy and crazy, but so is everyone else in that film. Tommy Lee Jones is also doing that. Yeah. Everyone's gone mad. There's no there's no boundaries in it. There's no boundaries of performance. No one's going, maybe you could rein that back just a little bit. It's like they've all looked at Jim Carrey and gone, oh, we do that. We're going at that speed, are we? Tommy Lee Jones is off his nut in that film.
He is, yeah, but he's...
He's really going for it.
He's going for it, but he still just doesn't reach the height of Jim Carrey in my book. Like, this is something... But I think it's that thing... I think I read that they didn't get on or something, or Tommy Lee Jones just didn't have time for Jim Carrey. And I think it was that thing of, like, because I think he was doing it, but maybe not enjoying it, whereas maybe Jim Carrey was doing it and genuinely enjoying it, just being off the wall.
Yes, I think that's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that shows. Interesting. What about a film that you used to love, but you've watched recently and you don't like it anymore? And I'm glad Batman Forever holds up for you.
Thank you, yes. For this, I've gone for a movie called The Party. I don't know if you're familiar with this, Peter Sellers movie.
The Peter Sellers movie. Yeah. Very, I could see why one might have an issue with this. But go on, tell us.
So it's a movie about Peter Sellers plays, naturally, Peter Sellers plays an Indian actor by the name of...
go on.
By the name of... I think his name is Hrundi V. Bakshi. And he has come over to Hollywood by some sort of machination. I don't remember exactly why. And he ends up at this party, and it's basically just 90 minutes or whatever, however long it is, of him just making an absolute fool of himself. You know, but ultimately, and I remember watching it because it was one of those movies that my dad was fond of. And it's so odd, right, sort of looking back on that and going, Dad, why do you find this funny?
Yeah.
I've actually not asked him this. I think I might ask him this now. I was like, what did you, what's the humour there, you know? But I think it's that thing of going, they can, you know, you can laugh at yourself, but it's where it's the people, it's like, the reason Goodness Gracious Me works as a TV show is because it's made by four brown people. And so they're allowed to do all the jokes about brown people. Whereas watching a movie like this, you're like, everyone involved in it is white, for sure. There's absolutely no way there's a single brown person on that set in 1960, whatever. And so they're all just going, let's just, you know, brown face up Peter Sellers, just make him act like what we assume a stupid Indian man would be like if he came to Hollywood. And it was kind of odd sort of watching it again. In prep for this, it was the first thing that sort of popped into my mind, and I sort of scanned my way through it and just went, the gags are on paper great gags, you know, it is funny, but it's not. None of it's okay, really. Ultimately, it's very it's very misguided, and to kind of imagine a bunch of people sort of going, "This is great. This is so funny. What a great idea. We're brilliant, aren't we? Brilliant." You know.
Yeah.
But then I read something really odd that apparently, like, I think like someone I mean, maybe it might have even been like Satyajit Ray or some like a very respected Indian filmmaker was a huge fan of it or something. And just went and wanted to work with Peter Sellers. So there was an odd thing. I don't know. It kind of made me think about sort of the bar that one sets for oneself based on where you're sort of placed societally, you know. And you just kind of go, well, what can I expect? I'm just going to laugh at, I guess I'm a joke or I don't know. We're getting into sort of deep psychological stuff here. But like, it's funny to me that like generationally, it's, you know, it maybe is accepted by a generation who I guess in some twisted way feel represented.
Well, maybe if it's literally the only thing as well.
Yeah.
It's like,
must have been. Yeah. Back then. I mean, in that arena of on that side of the world, to even for them to even acknowledge that brown people exist, that South Asian brown people exist. Would have been amazing, you know. But it just doesn't leave a good taste anymore. So as much of a genius as Peter Sellers is.
Very good answer. What's the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is good, but the experience you had seeing it will always make it meaningful to you. Himesh Patel, what is it?
This is a sort of a bit of a wide-ranging answer. And I guess you'll probably make me pick one of them, but in my head it's sort of the Lord of the Rings films. Because it was a real sort of turning point in my life on many levels, and sort of those early years of sort of transitioning from to primary school to secondary school and everything. I didn't find it easy. I didn't enjoy it. But for those 3 years at Christmas, there was a promise of this massive movie that I was going to love. And the first one I ended up seeing with my dad and a friend of mine, but because I didn't really know what it was. And then I was like, this is really good. And then I read the books. And so the second one and the third one, I went and got to see with my sister, both of them. And I look back on them now, and I think they're amazing movies. I think they were real game changers in terms of blockbuster cinema. But there was just something special about the security of it and the comfort that it gave me. And I guess if I pick one, I'll pick the last one, Return of the King, because it was the first time I remember being so excited to go and see a movie, you know, just being like, this is it. It's all been building up to this one, and the cinema's going to be packed, and we're all just going to be like, how's it going to play out? It's going to be amazing. And you know, I'm very close to my sister, and so to have that sort of those memories of going to see those movies with her and just being so excited about it. And
it turned out to be
incredible as well. They weren't a disappointment at all. They were quite something.
Yeah. That it was this event every Christmas. It was a real thing. Yeah. That's nice.
So I'll go with Return of the King. Let's go with that third one.
I'm actually going to let you have all three because...
Thank you.
Because the point of your answer is all three. And I don't normally do that. I've let you have A Different Sort of Heaven and this. I don't know what's going on here. I've gone soft in my old age.
What is
the film you most relate to?
Film I most relate to? I'm going with Boyhood. Again, wow. I was so excited to see this movie because I'm a huge fan of Richard Linklater, and I'd actually recently, within like a year, had seen the Before trilogy, and just fell in love with that, you know.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I'd never seen someone do that with time, you know, tell a story over, what was it, 18 years.
Yeah.
And then to know that he had this movie sort of coming down the road that he'd been shooting over 12 years, and I was just so excited for it. It felt like the kind of thing that's done in huge budget filmmaking, except it wasn't that at all, and I knew it was going to be something really personal and special. What I wasn't expecting was just how personal it would feel to me, because I was roughly the same age as the character in the movie, if maybe sort of 5-odd years off, but there was still a lot of the same sort of cultural touch points.
Well, at the end of the movie?
Yeah, sort of, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, start shooting in 2002, and a lot of those sort of touch points, just they really, I was like, I remember like waiting in line to pick up a Harry Potter book, and then the sort of the music he was listening to. Like, there was this one point where there was like this like Foo Fighters album track from like their 2004 album, and it was just playing in the background of a scene. And I, on one hand, I just appreciated the sort of detail of the sort of timeline of it all, but I was just like, I used to listen, that's like one of those tracks that no one knows that I know, and it's in this movie, you know. And then, you know, stuff like he had this at the end when he's like driving, I think, to college, and he stops off to take a picture, and he was using the same camera as the one that I had at the time, you know, Canon 7D, I think it was. I just remember going, this is really weird. And then the song that was actually then used in the trailer, and then at the end of the movie, this song called Hero by Family of the Year, I'd already heard it like 2-odd years before. It's a friend of mine who made me like this long like Spotify playlist, and it was on there. And I remember going, oh, that's what a beautiful song that is. So there was this odd sort of confluence of stuff that was already sort of in my life and that wound up being in this movie. And obviously, naturally, the movie is about life and those teenage years and how difficult and tumultuous they can be emotionally. And yeah, I just, it was really moving and really masterfully done, I thought. You know, it could easily have been so gimmicky and so sentimental, and actually, you know, there's something about Richard Linklater's sort of tone. He never gets too. I'm never annoyed by the sort of he's sentimental, but it's such a truthful sentimentality. I find it's
he's amazing. He loves people. He loves people, and he doesn't. You're right. He's not sentimental. It isn't like cheesy. I think the fact that he really, really gets time means that anything that's kind of moving is fully earned, because it's like, yeah, time has happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it isn't sort of manipulative. It's, yeah, he's amazing. That's a great answer.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
What's the sexiest film you've ever seen, Imesh Patel?
I tell you, the truth is that I didn't have an answer for this 20 minutes before we started recording. And I was like going, what? what is going on here? Why am I struggling to find a sexiest movie? And I realised it, well, I haven't realised fully. My hunch is that, you know, growing up in a culture that more or less it goes, well, sex doesn't exist. Doesn't exist. You know, right. Every Bollywood movie will more or less either revolve around or end with a marriage, and it's romantic, mm-hmm. there's love, but sexy and sort of the sex part of it was never present. And so you're sort of led to sort of go, well, I guess sex is something that is probably shameful and I should never enjoy it. So it took me a minute to go, sexiest film, because
why it's such big news. You do it three times a week. I think that's why it became.
I think that's what it is. Yeah. Still need to find out how that got out there. I had to sort of go. Most recently, I think the sexiest film I saw was Hustlers.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just undeniably. 100%. You're never going to forget the first time J-Lo turns up in that movie. You're just never going to forget it.
You're never going to forget that, and you're never going to get over her hugging in a big old fur coat.
Yeah.
You're just never going to go over it.
There's the initial thing of going, this is really sexy, just on a primal level, it's just really sexy. And then you're like, what's really sexy is that she's really good at everything she does.
Very, very good.
Just good. She pulls off this amazing performance in this movie, I think, and it just throws herself into this character. That is also a very sexy thing, I think. But yeah, it's a very sexy movie. So that's my answer.
Yeah. I mean, it's a perfect answer. Can't believe it took you this long to get there. It's Hustlers. It's obviously Hustlers.
Obviously it's Hustlers.
It's obviously Hustlers. The subcategory to this question. Troubling boners, worrying wide-ons. Which may be all of your boners. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm...
Do you have it?
It really led me down that road of going, everything is a troubling boner in my life.
A film you found arousing that you weren't sure you should.
What came to mind on this one was there's a film called Disclosure, Michael Douglas, Demi Moore film.
Fantastic.
And for some reason, the DVD was lying around. My parents used to have a shop where they would rent out films, you know, latest blockbusters and like some old films and whatever. And then every now and then they'd be like, for some reason it didn't get returned or whatever. It would end up coming into the house and it would just be lying around. And this movie was there, this DVD. And I remember just kind of going, oh, I wonder what this is. And there's quite early on in the movie, the sort of the crux of the whole thing is that Demi Moore's character sort of coerces, quite forcefully sort of coerces Michael Douglas's character into sort of having sex. Although I think the whole point is that they never really have sex, but there's, you know, some sexy stuff happens. And I remember going, this is kind of, because it's kind of hot. It's kind of like, you know, because then he kind of does get into it and it's a bit angry and you're just like, oh, I think it's hot, but I don't think it should be. And it definitely shouldn't be because it's not really consensual, is it? And then the movie goes off on this weird tangent towards the end where he... Yeah. Have you seen it? It sort of winds up in some sort of weird 90s...
I have seen it, but I haven't seen it in years.
VR.
It becomes like a corporate computer thriller or something.
Yeah, because it's basically they're working for a tech company and then he winds up in some VR space looking through files to prove that she did something or didn't do something. But it's like, you know, Windows 95 virtual reality. And it's quite funny to look at now. There's like this very odd moment where like Demi Moore's face is like sort of superimposed onto this very blocky 3D figure. And it's just laughable. Maybe in 94, 95, whenever it came out, it was like the peak of technology.
People are like, wow.
Yeah, they couldn't have imagined Avatar back then. But now it just looks like a terrible video game.
Well, Dad, what is the greatest film of all time? Objectively, the greatest film. Objectively.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because
we're saying objectively.
Objectively, yes. I'm going with 2001 A Space Odyssey.
You can have it.
I kept wanting to find something that might have a bit more sort of humour. But then I thought, I think there is some humour. I think Hal is kind of funny.
Yeah, Hal's funny.
You know, I feel like The Godfather sits alongside this in terms of films that changed Western cinema, at least. Really were shifts, you know, and I think Godfather becomes that because I think it really it's about those actors. And, you know, for me, it was definitely like a game changer. But 2001, I was like, this is astounding. The scale of this is in a way more epic and tangible than anything I've grown up watching, because it was literally, you know, it was all miniatures. And
yeah,
there's something about that that's just, you're not going to get it with CGI. And just the confidence of it tonally, you know, to make a movie that breathes like that, I don't know if you'd be able to do it today, really, would you? I mean, we're not used to that sort of movie that just sits on this sort of tone for that long. And there's an element of what I was talking about with sort of what I like about horror, where it just sort of this dread, this sort of thing just running underneath the whole thing, where you're like, what is happening? I'm not. And what I love about it is the mystery of it. You know, you don't really get any answers. It's so much is left up to interpretation. It's saying so much existentially. And running through the whole thing, you have this sort of very gripping narrative, this robot, that's this sort of AI that's trying to sabotage everything. And so therefore, it's also very prescient in everything, but it got the year a bit wrong. We certainly weren't doing that in 2001. We wish.
Yeah.
But, you know, everything else about it was so on point. And yeah, and it's one I you know, love revisiting.
It's amazing that it wasn't, that we hadn't been to the moon yet when that was made, and the way it shows is kind of amazing. It's amazing.
I watched this documentary called Room
237.
Yeah. And they were sort of, apparently there was a theory that Kubrick shot 2001 as a sort of test run for faking the moon landings. That's sort of a conspiracy theory that goes around, which makes me laugh.
And that he's acknowledging it in The Shining because the carpet.
The carpet, exactly. Spacious. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
What is the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
I avoided School of Rock. School of Rock is kind of the genuine answer, but I'm going to leave that to one side because everyone says it. I'm going... I was also then going to go for Interstellar, but I think maybe that's a bit weird. I haven't watched it in a while. I feel like if I watch it next time, I'm going to be crying a lot because I now have children of my own. But I'm going for Michael Clayton.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I absolutely love this movie. I think it's a masterpiece. And the writing, just, it's the kind of movie that I will watch over and over again just because I love to hear that dialogue. It's just so brilliantly written. That opening monologue, I remember watching it for the first time and I was just in straight away. I was like, this is amazing. This is absolutely amazing. And Tom Wilkinson's performance is on another level. And I mean, everyone's just operating at the highest level. And it's, again, kind of quite, it continues to be so relevant. And it's got that sort of lovely sort of Hollywood button on the end. Sort of George Clooney gets to do his sort of charming sort of got ya at the end. But yeah, I love it. I could watch it over and over again. It's a great movie. I think kind of underrated, maybe quite underrated or not as appreciated outside of sort of...
Maybe underseen.
Yeah.
Maybe not enough people seen it. What's the, on the other end of the scale, and we don't like to be negative, so we won't stay here too long. What's the worst film you've ever seen?
Gone Here with Cowboys and Aliens. It was like a 2010 movie, I think. It's one of those that
Daniel
I went... Daniel Craig, but it was... What got
John
me was... How did it go wrong? The people you've got involved in... I believe Damon Lindelof was involved somewhere down the line in writing it. But you've got Daniel Craig, Olivia Wilde, Harrison Ford, Paul Dano's in it, Sam Rockwell's in it. And John Favreau, who, you know, is one of the greats. It's just an odd one. It's really not good, and I'm still sort of trying to figure out how it happened.
I think the issue with it is I don't think it's bad necessarily. I think that it's a film called Cowboys and Aliens, and it's not fun. It's
serious, isn't it? Yeah, it's dramatic. Very serious. Yeah, very earnest.
It's very serious and dramatic and like, what if cowboys and aliens were, and you're like, hang on, wait. It's called Cowboys and Aliens. That sounds like sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Where's the fun? There's no fun in it.
I'm still not sure about that.
Siri's still not sure about that either.
Siri, yeah. Mm. Big fan, actually, of Cowboys and Aliens, yeah.
But I think it's, my memory of it is it's a good film, as in it's well done. It's just odd because it's not fun. It's like a quite heavy drama about cowboys and aliens.
But yeah, No, I think you're right. I think that's what it is. It's that I just couldn't take it seriously. But there are also like things in it that just make very little sense. And I mean, one of the things for me is I think the way that the people get abducted by the aliens isn't that they just sort of get lifted up by a, you know, invisible force. There's literally like lassos that come down. So it's like, hang on, so the is it cowboys?
But it's serious.
Cowboys are aliens? Is that what you're saying?
Was there a misprint?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Cowboys or aliens? What's the funniest film you've ever seen? What's the film that made you laugh the most?
I'm going with Blazing Saddles.
Excellent.
It was one of those movies I think my dad introduced me to, and I'd never seen anything like it at that point. It was just so anarchic. I'd never seen anything so anarchic. And so, but also watching it more recently and going, it made so many great points that continue to be relevant. There's the odd moment of going, okay, maybe now, if you make it now, there's bits and pieces that maybe need to shift here and there. I think Mel Brooks playing a Native American, maybe not a good move, but it's brilliant. It really makes me laugh. And especially the way it sort of just falls apart at the end. I always enjoy it. To some degree, it always catches me by surprise.
It's because you're invested.
Yeah, you are actually.
It's because you actually are invested. You're emotionally invested in it.
But I just love the idea of someone just going, well, I don't know how to finish this movie, so let's just, this is going to happen. And just let them do whatever they want to do and we'll just figure it out, you know.
we'll just run around the lot.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah.
Himesh Patel, you've been wonderful. However, when you were 87 years old and you went for a walk and you got to the top of some steps, concrete, by the way, and you and someone at the bottom of the steps looked up, they were fat, they were like, I think that's, is that Himesh Patel? And their friends gathered, like, I think that's him. And then you tripped on your own, on a little step, and you fell. Down, down, concrete, concrete. People giggled. Oh, God, they said. And then you fell the last six steps, landed on your head. Your head exploded like a watermelon. And the people that were laughing went, oh, God, I don't think we should have laughed at it. I think he's dead. And then someone said, do you know who it was? And they looked over and it was just your particles, just blobs of blood. There's nothing to really say who you are at all. It's just the torso of an 87-year-old man and blobs of blood and brains. And someone goes, I thought it was Himesh Patel again. How can you tell, they say. Anyway, I'm walking along with a coffin. You know, I'm like, and I see this crowd go around. I go, who's that? And they go, he says it was Himesh Patel. And they're going, it can't be that. How can you tell? And I go, well, there's no way of telling. Anyway, I say, give me a hand. We start stuffing your body in the thing. I'm like, could you see any bits of blob over there, like that we could... Any bit of him, just grab it. People getting cheeky now. They're chucking in stones, all sorts of stuff as well. Anyway, coffin ends up rammed, absolutely full. It's jammed in there. There's nothing. There's no room. There's only enough room for me to slip one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show the chocolate in heaven when it is your movie night, Mr. Himesh Patel?
It's not one of the movies that I've picked so far. Is that okay?
Great, even better.
It's Amelie. I'm going with Amelie.
Good day.
Yeah. Because okay, it's such a it's a life-affirming movie, I think. Beautiful. The first time I saw it, someone had left Film 4 on the telly and I was walking past and I just have a memory of walking past to go up the stairs and then sitting down on the sofa and not moving for 2 hours, you know. I was just so taken away by this movie. So, and it's just beautiful, you know. Every time I watch it, I feel... You know, the world is a better place. You know, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's really gorgeous. So it'd be nice to share that at heaven. Yeah.
What a lovely man. Himesh Patel, is there anything people should look out for, listen to, watch coming up?
I mean, coming up, everything I'm doing, I've no fixed date for when it's coming out. But I did a series called Station 11. I'm very proud of it. It's in the UK. It's on, I think, what's now called Lionsgate Plus, I believe that's where it's on. You could watch that. I did get nominated for an Emmy. I don't know if you've heard of the Emmys, you Brett. Did. They're pretty fun. It's a whole thing. Maybe you'll get invited one day. But
okay.
So I did that. That's good. But I've done a couple of short films that I'm I'm quite proud of. I did a short film called Enjoy, which is available on Disney Plus in the UK. I love that. I did a short film called Two Dosas, which is on YouTube. And a short film called The Fox, which is also on YouTube. Three short films. You know, we're on a film podcast, I think. Giving shout-outs to short films is quite nice. So check those out.
That's very nice. Himesh Patel, thank you for your time and for your excellent answers and for getting completely correct the greatest opening. You are brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a lovely death and good night to you.
Thank you.
So that was episode 245. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Himesh. Remember to watch Ted Lasso and Shrinking on Apple TV Plus. You can go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but don't write about the show. Write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a lovely thing to read and it always makes my neighbour Maureen happy. And you want to make her happy, don't you? We all want to make her happy. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you're all well. Thank you to Himesh for doing this show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Brand new to them, so thank you for having us. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come join me next week for the resurrection of Edgar Bloody Wright. I hope you're all well. Thank you for listening. And that's it for now. Have a lovely week. And in the meantime, please, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.